Thank you all for coming down tonight on a school night. We really appreciate it. We think it's going to be worth your while. Please welcome, first of all, the filmmaker of Uncovered, Robert Greenwald.
Good evening. Thank you all. Working on this movie has been an extraordinary experience in many ways, from the day that I got the idea, because I was sure that the lies were going to continue. I was sure that they were going to convince us that they found a program of weapons of mass destruction. But perhaps one of the most powerful and important aspects of doing this film for me has been meeting some of these real heroes who are in this movie. People in the CIA, people in the Foreign Service, weapons inspectors, people really who've given their lives to what they believe in. And the fact that these people who have nothing to gain all came forward at varying degrees of risk to speak out because of that old-fashioned value, patriotism, I found a very moving experience. Fortunately, one of my heroes from the film, a man who, although I don't know him well because I sit here watching his film every day, feel like I'm intimate with us, and a really brilliant mind is with us tonight. I'd like to introduce Mel Goodman. Mel's going to say a few words, then we're going to talk for a little bit and ask, have some questions and answers. But you want to talk a little bit first, Mel, in general?
Can I take about 5 minutes?
Sure. Yes.
Let me say a few words. First of all, I'm very grateful to Robert for putting this film together. This is the first time I can recall in any of the serious disasters we've inflicted upon ourselves in this country, and this was certainly a self-inflicted disaster, Vietnam was another, that someone has had the energy and the imagination and the tenacity to go out and get people who really just worked the problem, who I think for the most part didn't have an axe to grind. There's some people in that film who surprised me by their appearance in the film, and I think it took Robert's skill to do that. But when you see the film, and you have just seen the film, I would just want you to keep in mind several things. This is a terrible story. Fortunately, it's been told terribly well, but keep in mind, we're in a very difficult situation in Iraq and how we're going to extricate ourselves. The fact of the matter is no one thought about when they went into this war, which was the mistake to begin with strategically, and no one has any idea in Washington how we're going to get out of this mess. But this is one-dimensional of a four-dimensional crisis, and I just want to touch on each one of those very briefly before we go into a Q&A, if you want to do that. The first is we have never been involved in an intelligence scandal such as this one. Intelligence has been misused to get us into war, and you can go back to the Mexican War, the Spanish-American War, Vietnam and the Gulf of Tonkin resolution was an abuse of intelligence, but there has never been an institutionalized way of politicizing intelligence in a massive campaign of deceit. Even conservatives are now saying that this has been a systematic misrepresentation of the intelligence. I started out saying campaign of deceit, and now I just shorten it to these are lies, because that's essentially what we're dealing with. Now, number two, since there were some critics of this policy, we do have a document by David Kaye, who went out to Iraq, who was a firm believer in the fact that there were arms to be found in Iraq. Frankly, I was one of those who thought, my God, this is what the administration is going to do. They're going to prepare weapons, plant the weapons, and now they have David Kaye to say, aha, I have found the weapons. So this true believer goes out there, and he comes back and says, there are no weapons. But then he added something that I thought was outrageous. It was a gratuitous comment on his part, and it was that we were all wrong. Well, we, the collective we, weren't all wrong. The State Department dissented from the CIA's position. The Department of Energy dissented from the CIA's position. United States Air Force Intelligence, which is an extremely conservative institution, dissented. Even the Defense Intelligence Agency did a much better job on the chemical weapons issue than the Central Intelligence Agency, in addition to individuals who wrote op-eds and spoke out against the war. And Scott Ritter, I think, is a very good example in this film. Number three, and I just gave an interview outside with someone here from a radio station, this is not Vietnam. 55,000 Americans died in Vietnam. But in some ways, this is worse strategically than even Vietnam. And what I mean by that is during the Vietnam War, and we all have our favorite villains in that war. My own is Robert McNamara, and that's why I'm so upset that that terrible film won an Oscar, because I don't think Morris has an idea to the role that Robert McNamara played during that war, but I'm not going to get into that. Thank you. I appreciate that. I won't get into that tonight. But even Nixon and Kissinger, who are two of my favorite villains, they pursued a rather successful foreign policy in addition to Vietnam. They compartmented Vietnam. Vietnam was a disaster. It was wrong. But they pursued detente with the Soviet Union, the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty with the Soviet Union, the ABM Treaty with the Soviet Union, the opening to China in 1971 and 1972, improved relations with Europe. Compare that to Donald Rumsfeld's condescending remarks about the old Europe and new Europe. So Vietnam was compartmentalized in a certain way, and we went about our business. The Bush administration is doing just the opposite. They are taking the United States and national security policy down a new road that we haven't followed in this century, certainly since Theodore Roosevelt and the turn of the century, starting with the Spanish-American War, which was really internationalism, which grew into liberal internationalism under Woodrow Wilson and Franklin Roosevelt, and then grew into bipartisan policy that supported arms control and disarmament, collective security, detente, containment, improved relations with the Soviet Union and China, multilateralism. All of this has been overturned by George Bush in a very short period of time with very little resistance. In fact, the thing that astounds me the most is look at the arms control community. There used to be an arms control lobby in this country. Well, Bush abrogated the ABM Treaty, which was the cornerstone of arms control and deterrence, and he did that in order to deploy a national missile defense. I hope you feel very safe because Alaska's getting it now. You're going to have it by next year. This is a $10 billion system, the most expensive system in the American arsenal. It doesn't work. We know it doesn't work. The tests show it doesn't work, but we're deploying it anyway. We've been working on this for 50 years, but only Bush was foolish enough to go ahead to try to deploy this thing. So that is what is so outrageous about what this administration is doing. Now, finally, this is my last point. For the last 2 days, I haven't had time to really concentrate on the hearings out of Washington. I'm sure some of you have been looking at them. I've watched them for several hours at a clip. They're outrageous. I was opposed to the commission when it was named. And remember, the first commissioner named by President George Bush was Henry Kissinger. Here is a man who has spent most of his professional life covering up, dissembling, rewriting history, writing memoirs that cannot believe or should not be believed. Now he has a commissioner by the name of Governor Tom Keene from New Jersey, who has no understanding of intelligence issues or broad-based national security issues. And what I've seen for the last 2 days is exactly what's wrong with Washington. It's the old boy network played out on television. All of the members of the administration who come forward are treated very carefully. They get the kid glove treatment. Today was obscene because George Tenet, the CIA director, who's responsible for the 9/11 failure and the Iraq War failure, when he was, I can't say interrogated by Jamie Garlick, because she started her opening remarks with, "I must tell you about the great affection with which you were held by the entire administration in this city." This was an obscene remark. Tenet should have been embarrassed. He wasn't smart enough to be embarrassed. Compare that to the response that Richard Clark got when he testified because of the book, which I have just read, Against All Enemies. I am not a large fan of Dick Clark, I'll be honest with you. I've known Dick for a long time. I think his basic thesis, though, is right. That is, the war against Iraq was a terrible diversion from the battle against terrorism, that this administration had no plan for dealing with terrorism when it came to power. 9/11 didn't change that. 9/11 became the pretext for the invasion of Iraq. And some people have argued, including Paul O'Neill and now Dick Clark, that this administration came into office with the idea that we were going to attack Iraq from day one, and that was to avenge the essential defeat of George Bush over Desert Storm because he didn't go all the way into Baghdad. So I want you to keep these four or five things in mind in addition to the outstanding work that is in this film. And with that, I'd like to respond to your Q&A, but if you can just take 2 minutes, Caitlin would like to come up and has a few things to say, and then we can get started.
Hi, I'm Caitlin. Before the Q&A, I just wanted to ask that you continue the resistance against the reality that this administration is perpetrating on us by committing money, hopefully time, to educating us and the rest of the country as to what's really going on. This movie is so powerful and so important. It inspired a shirt that I have made called the Yellow Cake Uraniums. These shirts are based on softball teams, but the idea is to put out there topics of conversation that this administration is trying to suppress, such as the fact that they had bogus intelligence in the UN speech, the 16 words, and the Halliburton overchargers. They are now benefiting and profiteering from this war. So if you would please give some money so that we can continue events like this, so that we can change people's idea of what's really going on. I think it's important to continue the discussion, especially through and up until November.
Thank you. So why don't we see people have questions that they'd like to ask about the film or ask Mel a question?
Goodman was asked whether he thought WMD might be planted so that they could be discovered in Iraq.
Because it would seem really very careless to go through all this, controlling the media and basically setting up a classic kind of fascist little system that is very much aligned with Mussolini's classic formula of unifying the corporations and the government and using the media as their propaganda tool. Do you feel that this is just possibly an oversight? Because it would seem almost... I mean, even police have the policy of planting evidence when they want to make it stick.
Well, first of all, it's too late to plant the evidence. Whatever would be found now would lack any shred of credibility or plausibility because of the time that has elapsed between the end of the war and the so-called discovery. And frankly, I wouldn't expect this administration to do it because of the kind of administration that it is. This is a very arrogant group of people with great hubris, and they didn't think it was going to come to this. They felt that they were going to go into Iraq as a liberating force. They were going to be welcomed by the people of Iraq. They were going to install Ahmed Shalabi as the president, and he would be widely accepted by the people of Iraq, which showed no understanding whatsoever of the Islamic world and certainly of Iraqi Ba'athist politics. Also, if I can make one general observation, I'd be very careful about conspiratorial interpretations of American history. The conspiratorial interpretations have been wrong for the most part. We had them with regard to Roosevelt over Pearl Harbor, in which he was charged with allowing Pearl Harbor to take place so he could take the country to war because the country was opposed to war. And some of the same things have been said about George Bush, that he knew 9/11 was going to happen and let it happen because he wanted to go to war against Iraq. My experience, and I've been in Washington now since the mid-1960s, there's a wonderful British expression, cock-up. Most things that happen in Washington are not conspiracies, they're cock-ups. This is a massive cock-up.
Hi, I think Mr. Goodman, can you talk a little bit about the influence of Leo Strauss on this administration?
Yeah,
there's Benny.
Leo Strauss, poor Leo Strauss, he's a University of Chicago philosophy professor, and because he taught people such as Paul Wolfowitz and Albert Wallstetter, he is being seen as the godfather of the neoconservative movement. I don't know Leo Strauss, but I know members of the political science community who knew Leo Strauss, and this was an egghead intellect whose head was in the clouds, who had no interest in applying political theory to practical politics. Granted, some of his students have run amok, Paul Wolfowitz being the main one, and his godfather was Albert Wohlstetter, who brought us tens of thousands of more nuclear weapons than we really need, which is the great obscenity of superpower politics over the past 40 years. So Leo Strauss really has nothing to do with this. Let's name the names. We know who's responsible for this. It's a short list. It's Donald Rumsfeld. It's Dick Cheney. It's Doug Feith. It's Paul Wolfowitz. It's Condi Rice to a certain extent, and to a lesser extent, it's Colin Powell. This war has been brought to you by four or five, six individuals. That's enough to worry about, because this is, I guess I should choose my words carefully, but I don't always. This is like a quiet, soft coup d'etat. Four or five people have taken over the government and American foreign policy and American national security policy with virtually no resistance. Colin Powell went up to New York on the 5th of February, 2003, and gave an outrageously poor speech to the United Nations, and the American press rolled over and played dead. And even a good left-wing columnist like Mary McGrory wrote a column saying, "I'm persuaded." Now, Colin Powell's a very articulate and elegant and eloquent man, but he couldn't have been more wrong about the 29 charges. And fortunately, now we have the David Kay report from October of 2003, which just eviscerates Colin Powell in his argumentation. But we know who the people are. There's no point in looking at academic or philosophical godfathers for these people. And it's not fair to blame these individuals for the work of their students. You shouldn't do that to your professors. And I certainly won't do it to mine.
Thank you. I'm slightly encouraged that a few of the CIA analysts are unhappy with the present course. However, I think is a little misleading about your presentation, although Ray McGovern sort of touched on it when he said that the analysts' morale is very down at the CIA since all this has happened. What about the Directorate of Operations? My point being that we've had many, many destabilizations, military-run destabilizations by the CIA Directorate of Operations, and including many in recent history as well as in the past, including CIA, including Vietnam. And what I find a little interesting about this is that this particular war, you find, is a preemptive war that many in the CIA analyst branch do not feel is justifiable. However, many in the past, it seems that the CIA doesn't have a problem with. Not only that, they are the agency in charge of developing those military actions. And this has been the case history ever since 53, 54. What I'm trying to bring up here.
Yeah, let me just say one thing.
You want to hear my question?
I've heard it.
This is my question. No, I didn't, I didn't pose a question.
Okay.
This is my question. Unless there's a way to deal with the secrecy of covert operations at their inception and the ramifications of those operations decades later, such as what happened with Al-Qaeda and Taliban, as one example of many, we're never going to end this cycle.
Is that the
covert
question?
Operations is the problem. Secrecy is the paradigm. The National Security Act of 1947 must be amended.
Let me answer.
Thank you.
You're welcome to your opinions, but you can't create your own facts. I'm about to. I didn't interrupt you with that fulsome question. Now, just listen. Let me explain something about covert action that's very basic. The CIA doesn't conceptualize covert action and doesn't conduct its own covert action. If they did, the problem would be easy, and it could be stopped. Please, the problem is more complicated, and it's important that this be understood. Covert action is created, conceptualized in the White House by people, frankly, such as Dick Clark, who even said that today in his testimony. So if you look at the worst examples of covert action, and I have been a major critic and have written against covert action, you will find that everyone was endorsed by a president. The overthrow of the government of Iran in 53, President Eisenhower. The assassination attempt against Lumumba, President Eisenhower. the killing of President Diem in Vietnam, which was a terrible turning point in the war because it left us without any South Vietnamese force, President Kennedy. So the point I'm trying to make is covert action is far more complicated than your ideological interpretation of what you think covert action is. Let me say something about CIA morale. Ray and I go back a long time. We've known each other since the mid-60s, and if he hadn't broken his wrist, he'd be here tonight, and he's been a wonderful friend over the years. I didn't particularly agree with him on the issue of morale because there are probably a small number of people whose morale has suffered as a result of the abuses at the CIA, the manipulation of intelligence, but there are just as many, and you refer to the director of operations people, who are probably very proud of the role George Tenet has played today. And the statement that Tenet made today that I think should be repeated is he made, I thought, a rather phony attempt to apologize to the American people in the wake of what Dick Clark said, which I thought was somewhat heartfelt. And he apologized for not collecting the right intelligence to prevent 9/11 and not recruiting the right people to prevent 9/11. Neither one had anything to do with preventing 9/11. 9/11 was an intelligence failure. The collection was not bad. Recruitment is something that Tenet probably doesn't understand. We don't recruit foreign agents. Most foreign agents are walk-ins. We do very little recruiting at the CIA. It just the system just does not work that way. That's John le Carré's perception of the way clandestine operations work, but it has nothing to do with reality. So the failure at the CIA for 9/11, which Tenet refuses to recognize and refuses to correct or accept, is this was a massive analytical failure. The intelligence was there to stop 9/11, and I think Clark was trying to say some of that when he made his own apology today.
I worked with some pictures, and I'd like to say about
the fog of war. If you wanted to write a rebuttal, maybe you could go on the IMDb website where they have a link, and you could say your point of view about the war, because Errol Morris is a very respected filmmaker and documentarian, and he is anti-war, actually. And I think the Academy, one reason they voted for him was because they thought he might say something on the microphone when he won.
That's a poor reason to give someone an Oscar. I'm a fan of Errol Morris's work. I saw The Thin Blue Line when it was released, and I thought it was one of the greatest documentaries I've ever seen. The technique he used in filming Robert McNamara was extremely compelling. And I don't want to be critical of Morris because he's not here. I just don't think he knows enough, understands enough about the role McNamara played and the dishonesty of Robert McNamara. And what I regret he did inadvertently was to give McNamara a chance to try to redeem himself, to rehabilitate himself. And for that, I won't forgive Errol Morris. He's a very naive person.
Gentlemen, can you confirm, is there any language in the Federal Aviation Administration or Air Force language that dictates the destruction of commercial airlines that have been hijacked? And if there is such language, and can you confirm, is this an urban myth that the Air Force kept its planes on its airfields for 54 minutes before they were scrambled?
No, that's ridiculous. Again, don't think conspiracy, think cock-up. A plane flew into the World Trade Center. A few minutes later, another plane flew into the World Trade Center. These were traumatic events. People got on hotlines, got in touch with Langley Air Force Base, got in touch with reserve units and National Guard, and got aircraft in the air. And remember, at the time those decisions were made, the radar of the FAA, which is monitored by the Secret Service, showed that there were at least 19 other aircraft in the air that couldn't be accounted for. My wife works at the CIA building. One of those planes was supposedly heading for the CIA, and her daughter heard that in New York City on her way to work. It wasn't true, but there were all sorts of rumors. Now, there is something in this country from the 19th century called the Posse Comitatus Act. There are limits on what our military can do within our borders from this act. There was nothing on the books in either the FAA or the Pentagon or any war plan or any civil defense plan that it would have permitted an Air Force pilot to go up in the air and target a commercial airliner. And think about that for a second, the kind of decision that would have required, even if they were sure in the wake of the three planes that went into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, what a difficult decision that would have been made. Now, I understand there have been changes in Air Force doctrine that will allow the chairman of the Joint Chiefs in very extreme situations to give such orders. But this begs the question about the Posse Comitatus Act that probably should be debated in this country, because we're sort of making foreign policy and national security policy on the run in a mood of real fear, tension, and anxiety, which is the worst way to make policy. But we are stuck in that kind of environment right now.
A two-part question from the audience came regarding, first, how Greenwald became involved in doing the movie Uncovered, and second, Bush's role in the policy decision-making regarding the war.
I got the idea for the film, I think it was the first or second week of June, the notion that I had to do something, or I was convinced that they would pull off these lies, you know, with a kind of self-aggrandizement. I was going to stop it myself. But I felt that, you know, I make films, this is what I could do. So basically I started in the middle of June with the notion about showing weapons of mass destruction versus programs of weapons of mass destruction. Then I heard about the CIA guys, and that took me to the next level. And I was in this huge rush because I wanted to get it done. I went as far as I could. Then I ran out of resources, and MoveOn.org, which I hope everyone here signs up for, as well as Center for American Progress, which is a think tank in D.C., came to the rescue with support to allow me enough funds to finish the movie. And they both said, whatever you do, do it quickly. We didn't realize at the time that we were doing an unusual thing, which was making a film while the issues were still being debated. Usually it's after the case. So under that pressure, and with all of us working 7 days a week and people sleeping in the editing room, and Jim Gilliam, our incredible researcher, who's sitting in the back there working his butt off, we finished it by, I think, the second week of October. Was that the screening in D.C.? Do you remember the at Center?
The International Spy Museum.
Yes, at the Spy Museum was where we had our premiere. So it was, I guess, July, August, September, 3.5, maybe 4 months. The budget, with a lot of people not getting paid, was around, I think it was about $200,000, but a biggest hunk of that went to purchase the stock footage that you see, the news shows and all of that. You have to go to the networks and the cable companies and ask them if they will license you the footage. And they don't give a damn that you're a documentary or that you have no money, you know, particularly this. So that's where the biggest part of the money went.
So let me get back to your question about President Bush. I'm basically a Soviet analyst. I was at the CIA, and that's my background. And the Soviet Union, there's a great Russian expression that God is high and the Tsar is far away. And that led to the belief that you don't blame the immediate leader. It must be some other force that's responsible for the crisis or the disaster we're going through. And even in the worst purges and killings in Stalin's Russia, there was a tendency to not blame Stalin, but to blame must be his advisors, and Stalin doesn't know what's going on. And ironically, I'm not comparing us to Russia or to the Soviet Union by any means, but I see a tendency still in this country that it's, oh, it's Cheney or it's Rumsfeld. Well, the president's name is George Bush, and we're going to have to cope with the idea that these are his decisions. And the war that he's trying to correct is the war that his father pursued, but not adequately, according to George Bush and Rumsfeld and Cheney and Wolfowitz. And in the wake of 9/11, when at least three major members of the policymaking group wanted to forget Afghanistan, Paul Wolfowitz said there are no strategic targets in Afghanistan, and Rumsfeld agreed with him, Cheney wanted to attack Iraq immediately. It was certainly the president's decision to pursue Afghanistan, the Taliban, and al-Qaeda, and then later there came the decision to invade Iraq. These are the president's decisions. I'm not saying there aren't influential people, and we know who they are and how they're being used, but don't give him a free ride or a free ticket by any means. For one thing, you're underestimating him, and you're underestimating how he looks at the international arena and the kinds of policies he will use to influence that arena. Remember, he gave the speech at West Point. Someone mentioned preemptive war, June 2002, the West Point graduation address, where he introduced preemptive war into the American political rhetoric for the first time in our history, an extremely dangerous concept because you cannot go into war preemptively without a piece of paper that offers certainty that if you don't attack, the other side will attack first. That's preemptive war. Intelligence will never give you that ability, or very rarely. I've never seen it in my own time, to go to war on that basis. The Israelis had it once, and people think that's the June war. It wasn't. It was the October war. They could have preempted, but chose not to because of what happened during the Six-Day War in 1967. Intelligence is not a photograph. Intelligence is not a picture. Intelligence is a mosaic with not all the stones present and some out of order, or maybe just a series of ink blots that people are there to interpret for themselves. But intelligence will not give you the certainty. And remember, Milt Bearden in the film said intelligence may keep you out of war, but it's not a good way to go to war. And Milt, who's had experience with these things, Milt ran the arms supply covert program to the Mujahideen through Pakistan. So I think Milt ought to be listened to on that one.
Question for Mr. Greenwald. I know you've got some plans for theatrical distribution. Are there any plans to try and get this on television before the election?
Since this is a non-political movie. Yes, we've fortunately, the Sundance Channel is going to air the film in September. The Sundance Channel also has purchased the previous UN movie that I did, Unprecedented, about the Florida 2000 election. So it'll be on thank you. So it'll fortunately be airing in September, and as far as I know, that's just before the election. Sixty Minutes generally doesn't take outside films, but as KCT, well, it's either or. You know, it'll be Sundance Channel, and then maybe other possibilities. No, that's not true. There's quite a few. But you know, here's my feeling about this. I made the film. It's basically a tool. I encourage you to buy copies, to make copies, to burn copies. You don't need permission. It's to be used. If anybody can get it to KCT, you know, do with it, because now it's in all of your hands as a way to spread the word and to get it to as many people as we can. And anybody who knows any of these other sources, please feel free. Give it to them, talk to them, harass them, chase them, do whatever you want.
Just a quick question. You mentioned preemptive war being an unusual thing. How do you distinguish, or what is the distinction between preemptive war and invasion? For example, the invasion of Panama, the invasion of Grenada, or other military actions. What is the difference between preemptive war and invasion?
Well, you're mixing apples and oranges. Invasion is the technique we used in Iraq or any time you go to war. And when you're talking about preemptive war, you're talking about a justification or rationalization for why you go to war. So one is a strategy, the other is a tool of military conflict.
I've yet to try and make copies of your film. I'm going to do that this weekend. If some person at a video duplication place says, well, you need to have permission, how can we tell them? No, yes. We don't, or have them get a hold of you or something like that?
Yes, 204-0404, or they can email me, and we'll happily say, yes, I've said it in many different ways. I mean, I feel that very strongly, really, it is, and we want as many people to see it in as many different venues. So.
Which area code is that in?
310.
Okay, and a question for Mr. Goodman. Is it true that Richard Clark was the person that authorized the flight out of the 140 Saudi nationals, as well as people from other countries, in the days after 9/11.
Is everyone familiar with the context of that question? Just a quick context point. The night of September the 11th and into the next day, Prince Bandar, the Saudi ambassador in Washington, who's the senior ambassador in Washington and the most influential ambassador in Washington, authorized an operation that the Bush administration agreed to get 140-some Saudi nationals, including 24 members of the bin Laden family, out of Washington and back home to Saudi Arabia under the pretext that he was fearful of retribution for what, the fact that 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudis. Richard Clark today, at his hearings, by the way, denied that he made the decision, that the request came to him, and he said he couldn't make that decision, and said that he moved the decision over to the FBI and to the State Department. Colin Powell is on record as saying he had nothing to do with the decision. The FBI has obfuscated. I feel quite certain that the White House made the decision. And the reason why this is important is if you remember the joint inquiry of the Senate and the House on 9/11, there were 28 redacted pages, pages that the White House refused to release with a joint report. All 28 of those pages dealt with Saudi Arabia. The context of the report, of those 28 pages, I haven't read the 28 pages, I've talked to people who have, was very embarrassing to the Bush administration because it showed that close, incestuous relationship between the Bush family and the Saud family. There's a wonderful book out by Craig Unger on that called House of Saud, House of Bush. And the way these people were allowed to leave the country with no FBI interrogation, no interview, no questions asked, whoever Prince Bandar wanted out got out of the country. It raises serious questions about the nature of the Washington relationship with Saudi Arabia.
Mel, on KPFK today, you were talking about this issue, and you seem to be suggesting it might be the sleeper issue of the year, what you were just talking about. I'm wondering, do you have any thoughts as to why John Kerry and the other Democratic presidential candidates aren't making a bigger deal out of this and just asking for an explanation?
Well, I don't think I was suggesting it was going to be the great sleeper issue. I was making it clear that I thought this was an outrageous development, that Prince Bandar is much too influential with this administration, and he's been with all administrations while he's been in Washington. I think the reason why Kerry and others stay away from this is a very simple one. It gets back to my remarks about conspiracy theory. No good politician will go near a conspiracy theory. And the Saudi story, the way we've had it, and frankly, I've looked at the Craig Unger book, and there are parts in there that I think he's overreaching. It's not clear who these people were and whether they would have offered anything. But the fact of the matter is, when you shut down American commercial traffic in the skies, when a man in Pittsburgh was waiting for a heart to arrive for a transplant operation, but waited on the table and couldn't get the heart because his heart was grounded over Colorado. How do you justify letting 140 Saudis out of the country, including 24 members of this huge bin Laden family? So it's a loose end that someone's going to have to tie up one of these days. And Clark, frankly, was very unimpressive. He said he didn't know the number of people on the plane, which I found hard to believe, and he didn't remember who made the original request, which I don't believe.
This is for Mel Goodman. You talk about conspiracy theories, but in fact there is no directorate of conspiracies at the CIA. There is a directorate of operations, covert operations specifically. Relative to September 11th, there was, you know, plans from the 60s, which seemed to keep getting recycled, like the Phoenix program, like Operation North Woods, which seems to be, you know, almost exactly what happened that morning. Even the day they chose for it, 9/11, symbolically a state of emergency. You know, how is it that we can dismiss all this as theorizing when there's so many
facts? Because
you're
throwing out unsubstantiated opinion without any factual content whatsoever. That is the simple answer to your question. Again, you can have your opinions. You can't create your own facts. There is nothing in the CIA that's going on that resembles the Phoenix program. Covert action is not hatched at the CIA. Obviously, this appears to be a recurring theme. It's too simple. It just doesn't work that way. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the...
Am I making Operation Northwoods up? Operation Northwoods was signed off on by Admiral Lyman Lemnitzer in the 60s. This was a plan to hijack airplanes, mock up civilian planes with military planes, crash them into buildings.
General Lemnitzer didn't work at the CIA.
No, it's obviously military intelligence. But this is a Pentagon plan.
I'm totally unfamiliar with it. It has nothing to do with the CIA. Do you know how many people he fired? Let me ask you a question, since you seem knowledgeable. How many people did Admiral Turner fire?
I know between 800 and 1,500.
Six people, and the director of operations went crying around to the news media about what Admiral Turner was doing to the poor director of operations. The fact of the matter is, this was in the wake of Vietnam. Jimmy Carter very correctly wanted to reduce the size of the CIA, which had grown too large during the Vietnam War, just like everything else had grown too large. Six people lost their jobs. Big deal. No one significant that I'm aware of.
Let's do three more questions. Keep them brief.
I have a real sense of frustration that almost all Americans seem to think that the weapons of mass destruction were found, and that Bush is doing a wonderful job. And I'm wondering, I assume these are people that are going to vote. Where are they getting their news, and don't they have any sense? It's just very frustrating that we're not getting through to most of the people.
The encouraging thing is, if you believe polls, we are getting through. Bush has had huge approval ratings, which have gone down and down and down. And where we are now, by all reports, is the country is pretty evenly divided. It's about 50-50, 47-45. It goes up and down a little bit. For a wartime president, that is a major achievement for such a loss of support. So we've seen a tremendous downward movement in his poll numbers, an increase of people in opposition, and this is in a lot of where, remember, it's not a national election, it's an election of 17 states, and it was seeing us in the swing states. Right now, based on all the experts who do this for a living, it's a very, very close election, with the benefit on our side, because there's such enormous passion to get rid of George Bush.
Mr. Goodman, I'm even more concerned that a new administration, even if progressives and liberals and Democrats were successful and John Kerry were to become president, we talked a lot about the parallels with Vietnam. The phrase peace with honor was used in Vietnam to prolong the war far beyond any chances of success. And, you know, first Carol Moseley Brown and now echoed by John Kerry, and then he jumps all over this Spain for, you know, wanting to pull their troops out. Do you think Kerry's got the guts to change direction, and won't we have more of the same?
Well, I look at John Kerry in terms of what he did in the 1970s, showing both military courage, which is one kind of courage, and intellectual courage, which was another kind of courage. The Purple Hearts from Vietnam, the kinds of assignments he volunteered for, which were the most dangerous jobs in the United States Navy, and then to come back and lead a Vietnam anti-war movement. And if you read the Douglas Brinkley book and read the testimony that a young John Kerry gave, I would say yes. And if you look at the issues he's taken on that no one would take on in this country, you know, who was the one who really took on the Iran-Contra issue in the Senate, the BCCI, the corrupt banking issue, the drug issue in this country? It's been John Kerry. So I don't worry about that. What I worry about is we have a president standing in a hole who's still using his shovel. And if that hole gets much deeper, it doesn't really matter whether it's John Kerry or someone else. It's going to take a hell of a long time to fill that hole up.
I also want to quote in response to that Grover Nyquist, the great right-wing ideologue and organizer. He said an interesting thing, which is a whole other way of looking at it. He says if Bush doesn't do something that he, Grover Nyquist, and his conservative group want him to do, and he doesn't do it because of political reasons, he doesn't blame Bush. He blames himself. He says, we haven't organized strongly enough to give him the will. And I would say it's the same thing. It's not looking to Kerry to save us. It's we have to be strong enough on all the issues so that we create the momentum that creates the
you know, the policy that we want.
Also, let me add something to that. My favorite news anchor is Jon Stewart. I don't know how many people watch. Well, Jon Stewart gave a wonderful news hour in Washington a few weeks ago. My wife and I went. And his remark was, and it's an answer in part to your frustration, because I feel the same frustration, but his answer was a little different. Then he said, you know, Bush is not stupid. We're stupid. And the reason why he knows that, that's Jon Stewart knows that, is because Bush wouldn't talk to us like that if we weren't stupid. So it's really time for the American people to do something, to write some letters, to get out and demonstrate, to call congressmen, to write congressmen, to get active. It's just not enough to complain about George Bush, because the conservatives are not sitting on their hands. I'll tell you something. They're much better organized than we are. They're much more effective than we are. They have more money to spend than we do. So if we have superior ideas in terms of concepts and approaches to how government should be managed, but we keep it to ourselves, it doesn't do a lot of good.
Can I be concerned? Is that I think we will have exactly the same coup d'etat we had last time. Because now they have a new voting machine, and they are talking about how close this race, even closer than last time. What's to stop them since nothing got stopped in the first place?
Well, there's a very deep and active movement of people who care and want to do something. There will be poll. I mean, there's a series of things going on. First of all, there are laws that are in the works, you know, to create a paper record in some states. Well, we don't know that yet. This still is questionable. And there will be poll watchers all over the country. The Kerry campaign and also independents are setting up a nationwide program which will go to the states where they expect the elections to be closest, have people there, have people counting. So, you know, the same mistake won't get made again. There may be a different mistake, but it's not going to be the same one. And also, I think it's real important to, again, as Mel was saying, to take action. If that's an issue that concerns you, get on the website. There are probably 50 groups around the country that are doing things now. Get involved and do something. There's a lot that can be done.
Really quick, when I saw your film and I missed the beginning, I felt that it was, if I've never heard anything contrary to what the Bush administration and their cohorts have talked about, if I walked in and haven't discovered anything aside from what they've told us, then I would say, yeah, this is good. This is amazing. This is really shocking to me. But I'm wondering, why not delve into the bigger game plan more? Talk about the drugs and the oil and the battles for both of those and how they affect our economy and how the CIA has been dealing drugs for 25 years and all that stuff and make the link between Wall Street and our government, you know? And my question real quick is... Real quick, what's your stance or your perception of Mike Rupert and his observations?
I don't know enough about him, but this movie was specifically designed to deal with the lies that we're being told about the war and to use experts to debunk them. Somebody else needs to do those other movies, and there's certainly room for many more. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, and we have a very handsome man with the final question.
I just want to... not go into a big rant about this, but I just state for the record that there is indeed a global conspiracy. And read any book by David Icke. He's a little crazy, but it's out there, and that's what's happening.
Who said the Venice crowd is paranoid?
We're in Venice.
Do you guys want to finish with anything? Or
Thank you all. I would like to just personally again stress, as what Mel was saying before, we all have... anger, frustration, rage. I've had the honor of working with Military Families Speak Out, which are over 1,000 families, 15 of whom have had their children killed in the war. There's an enormous amount that can be done. The only thing we can't do is, as my grandmother would say, sit here and kvetch to ourselves.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's hear it for Robert Greenwald and Mel Goodman. Thank you to Wade for helping us out with the projection and the sound. Thank you to Pastor Tom at the church. Thank you all very much. Have a good night.
This program was produced by the LA Sound Posse.
a collective of media activists working to build a decentralized democratic media. The LA Sound Posse records speeches and events dealing with social justice issues. We anti-copyright these recordings and share them via the internet, via community radio, and as CDs distributed through grassroots social justice groups, nonprofit organizations, committed individuals, and others. Our goal is to be part of the creation of a broad-based democratic media. You can reach us on the web at www.lasoundposse.org. That's www.lasoundposse.org. You can also find our programs available for free download on the web at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net. This recording is anti-copyrighted. If you found it of value, please feel free to copy it and distribute it to others, thus becoming yourself part of an active, vibrant movement in democratic media. Thanks again for listening.